the reason we've always leaned so heavily into the integrated form factor is, to us, it represents good value for money. You're combining the casework and the power supply into one. You're not duplicating those things. I mean, even packaging, transportation, all these things have costs associated. And if you split the amplifier into the pre and the power, those costs, you know, double.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forums Hi-Fi podcast for Monday, the 5th of August. And on this edition, I'm joined by AV Forums Hi-Fi editor Ed Selly. Hello, Ed.
Hello, sir.
And from Riga, we are joined by Ashton Wagner. Ashton.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Welcome along to the podcast. We will explain why you're here in a second, but this week we are talking about integrated amplifiers. Are they the heart of a decent hi-fi system? Where have they been? Where are they going? Where are we at the moment? We're going to cover all of that in the podcast today. And if you want to watch the podcast, you can do that on our YouTube channel, which is AV Forums podcast channel. It's different from the AV Forums main channel. So it's AV Forums podcast channel. If you subscribe over there, you will never miss a AV Forums podcast. There is one every Monday at 7 p.m. And of course, we also do audio only through the usual channels out there like Spotify and iTunes. If you enjoy our content and the podcast and you think that it deserves a wider audience or you want to show your friends or whatever, then please do consider telling your friends or your peers by posting the links on groups and forums and so on, so more people can find us out there and find the content. That would be appreciated. So who are we? We're AV Forums. We are one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the internet, and we started in 2000. The editorial started in 2003. And we create content for you, the end user, without any influence from manufacturers, advertisers, that kind of thing. We try to be as unbiased and as experienced with our opinions and knowledge as possible. So who are we and why should you take our opinions and knowledge and so on? Well, we've been around a long time. I'm Phil Hinton. I'm the editor of the site, have been for the last 20 years, and I help build the editorial as you know it today. I'm also an enthusiast, experienced AV and hi-fi reviewer, audio reviewer, and certified by ISF, THX, and PVA. We also have Ed on the podcast. Ed, very briefly, who are you and what have you been doing?
Sure. I'm Ed Selly. I'm the hi-fi editor for AV Forums. I've been producing content for the site since 2012. I've been a member now for over 20 years, which still freaks me out to this day. Unlike Phil, I'm not exclusively employed by AV Forums, so you will encounter my work in other locations as well. But AV Forums is a very important part of what I do and is sort of in many ways the interface I have with actual members of the human race in reality, so it's extremely invaluable for that. I am exclusively two channel these days. It's never say never thing. It may be that one of these days I have to do an emergency off-site multi-channel review, but we now have dedicated multi-channel reviewers, so I look at all things two channel, source, amplification, speakers, sometimes complete systems, and a smattering of portable audio too.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Ed. And joining us is our guest, Ashton. Ashton, why don't you give us a little bit of your background, who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a electronics engineer and I work on the R&D team here at Riga, working on designing anything to do with electronics, really. So we've got a full range of amplifiers, CD players, power supplies, phono stages. There's various electronics that go on the turntables, of course, as well, which most people will probably be familiar with. So I've been with the company for 10 years. I joined out of university. I actually did my work placement here when I was a student. So we've been here doing lots of fun projects and
Excellent. Well, we're going to get into what you do a little bit in this conversation. So what is the conversation today? What are we talking about? Well, the whole of this year, 2024, we've been taking you through the different aspects of a hi-fi system, whether that's separates, all-in-one, and so on, and why you should consider certain components and so on, and what might work for you, what might not work for you. In this episode, we're going to look at integrated amplifiers, and are they really the heart of a decent hi-fi system these days? Is integrated just as good as preamp and power amp and so on? So we're going to get into this. Ed, we're going to come to you first because there will be people out there who do listen to the podcast. And we never say they're silly questions, but they may be scared to ask, what is an integrated amplifier compared to a preamp and amp?
Right, okay. It's very straightforward. The clue is in the integrated bit. It is a single chassis unit that combines both the preamplifier, which is the collation of your external inputs, and the setting of gain, and the power amplifier, which is the actual mechanical part of the amplifier, which delivers the energy required to drive a pair of loudspeakers. As with absolutely everything in two channel, there are some peculiar exceptions to this rule. You can have integrated amplifiers that take up more than one box because manufacturers sometimes take the power supply out or do other sort of similar functionality. But the ethos when we're talking about an integrated amplifier is a device which performs the complete remit of amplification without recourse to any other component in the system needed to do it. In the heyday of hi-fi, it might be fair to say that they were regarded almost exclusively as a more economy-based option. And until comparatively recently, it wasn't that common to find integrated amplifiers exceed a couple of £1,000. Recent years, it's all gone a bit crazy. Integrated amplifiers can be found comfortably north of £20,000 these days, and there are examples that go higher still. The arguments that you cannot produce a high quality device that occupies a single chassis, generally speaking, have been put to bed. The irony of this, of course, is that one of the devices that was most interesting at Bristol is something that Riga has due out at some point in the future, which is their first pre-power amplifier in quite a long time. So, what as Ashton will undoubtedly cover, the company is not wedded to integrated amplifiers. They've built pre-powers in the past and they're going to build pre-powers in the future. But one of the reasons I was so keen to get someone from Riga on for this podcast is that integrated amplifiers have been a big part of what the company does for a comparatively long period of time. So that's what an integrated amplifier is, and that's why I was keen to get someone from Riga in for this podcast. Oh, Phil, yeah.
Yep, done that again, left myself on mute. So yeah, that's a nice explanation into what we're going to talk about this afternoon. So Ashton, do you need an integrated amplifier for a decent hi-fi system if you're going for something a little bit mid-range to higher end? Can you do it with an integrated, or do you have to separate things out?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the level you're going for. Obviously, we have made integrated amplifiers up to I think it was about 6, 7, 8 thousand pounds. So I think we've certainly felt that the performance of an integrated amplifier can be quite strong. You kind of touched on how prominent we've been, with our integrated amplifiers. And indeed, we did go away from doing a pre-power for a period of time. Soon to go back to, but there probably is a technical trade-off and a perceivable performance-based trade-off. However, as you said, there's integrated amplifiers that are pushing 10, 20,000 pounds. With the right methodology in terms of the construction, the shielding, the circuit design and layout, you can certainly achieve a fairly high level of performance in an integrated package. And I think the reason we've always leaned so heavily into the integrated form factor is, to us, it represents good value for money. You're combining the casework and the power supply into one. You're not duplicating those things. I mean, even packaging, transportation, all these things have costs associated. And if you split the amplifier into the pre and the power, those costs, double. So we are always, when we're trying to make a product, make sure that the performance of the product is balanced across all facets of the product, all the different parts of the circuit, any influence that things like the, proximity to the power supply, the casework, all these things that have an effect. You're trying to find that level of balance. And to us, the integrated amplifier can offer a very high level of performance. But when you're getting into the very, very upper echelons, then yeah, we can see an argument could start to be made that you're better off separating them out. So where you draw that line, it depends on the execution. It depends on how critical the customer is being, really.
And what are the drawbacks for people out there who, they maybe just look at the cost factor, but when it comes to integrated, some of the things that you've been talking there, you've taken into account as you design the amplifier. So what should people be looking for when it comes to integrated amplifiers and possible pitfalls to performance because of the one box approach?
Well, the one that's kind of inherent in taking a one box approach is that you're trying to cram everything into one space. So when you have more sensitive circuits, things like phono stages, the preamplifier, when they're next to the power supply for and it depends on the power of the power amplifier. Is it class A, B, class A, is it class D? Are using linear power supplies, switch mode power supplies, all these things factor in. But yeah, you've got a proximity and an isolation compromise. With good design, you can minimize that, and you can make any influence from that quite low. But it's still there. Almost to me, the bigger factor is going to be the design decisions that have been made in order to hit a certain price point. What you don't want to do in an ideal world is compromise on the level of performance of one part of the circuit. So if you've got one of these heavily feature-laden integrated amplifiers where you've got maybe Bluetooth and a streamer and a DAC built in and a phono stage on it, you only have so much budget to play with, and where you distribute it, and it goes back to what I was saying about balance. We try to always make sure that we're keeping a good balance, and the level of performance of all the constituent parts of the circuit sort of match or are in harmony with each other. You don't want to have a really, really high spec amplifier with a really, really basic DAC, for argument's sake. And I think that's potentially sometimes where things can go maybe a bit awry if people are focusing on trying to cram in as many features as possible at the potential expense of performance of the individual constituent parts. So that would be the big thing I would look at if I was, shopping for an integrated amplifier, is make sure that the compromise that have been made are in balance with the overall level of performance and the design.
I'd carve that with laser onto the moon, if I'm honest. It applies to pretty much every single aspect of this, and it's succinctly put. Not least, as we'll come to, you also then start looking at the amplifier A may have a feature that's interesting. Are you actually going to use that feature? You'll be paying for it. And as Ashton so eloquently points out, it will be paid for at the expense of something else in the amplifier. So as we come into functionality, everything that we say, you need to come back to that point in this conversation, because it's true of absolutely everything, and it really is very important indeed.
So, Ed, as somebody who looks at these things on a weekly basis, and you've probably lost count of how many integrated amplifiers have come through your system, what kind of advice are you going to be giving to the consumer out there who's a little bit confused, doesn't know whether what kind of way they should be going with their system? What advice would you be giving them?
Well, you have every right to be confused. This is a very, very, very interesting time for integrated amplifiers, in the same way that it's an interesting time for a lot of two-channel audio, full stop. If we take, for example, the price point of roughly £1,200 to £1,400, we've looked at three amplifiers in that price point, which exemplify where we are. At one end of it, we've got something like the Musical Fidelity A1, which is a rehash of a classic design. But because it's a rehash of a classic design, functionality is focused on it being an amplifier. Musical Fidelity has seen fit to give you a phono stage, but that's it. You've got a row of RCA inputs and a phono stage and an amplifier. At the other end of that, we've got the NAD 3050, which again is a very good product. Now, for slightly more money, you can equip that with a streaming module, slap it into the back. You can actually do that yourself, or you can order it without. And that is listed as an integrated amplifier, but it is, in every meaningful sense of the word, an all-in-one system. Now, between those two extremes, we've got the LX Mark IV from Riga, which is less bare boned than the musical fidelity. It also has digital inputs, it has a headphone socket, and so on and so forth. But it still, broadly speaking, needs other pieces of equipment to function, unlike the NAD, which is completely self-contained. This is, I don't like absolutes, but this is not something that's really been the case with integrated amplifiers before. You've got the option of doing something very, very old school, exactly how integrated amplifiers used to be, or you've got something which doesn't need source equipment at all. And you need to have an honest conversation with yourself as to what source equipment do you have, what do you want this amplifier to do, and how likely are you to want to make changes in the future? Because if you go all in on a device like the NAD, any improvements and alterations you make to the system have to be taken down the fact that in terms of actual external connectivity to other items, it's at something of a disadvantage compared to the other two more conventional amplifiers. Equally, if your budget is pretty tight, buying the musical fidelity is probably not the most sensible idea that you've ever made, because it's going to require other bits of equipment to do anything useful. Now, the Riga sits somewhere between these two points, and I don't think it does that by accident, but we'll cover that in a bit. And this is why you need to sit down. We've had this crops up in every single podcast that we've done this year. You need to have a completely honest conversation with yourself about what your aspirations for your system are, how you intend to use it, and whether this is something that's going to be with you for years or an interim stage to something more elaborate in the future. And at the moment, we're in the fortunate position that integrated amplifiers can cover off all of these eventualities for you, but you do need to decide which of these paths you're going down. Now, all the reviews are on the site for those three amplifiers. You can have a look at them at your leisure, and you can see that basically for very similar amounts of money, you end up with something which is wildly different. So this is why we wanted to, this podcast was important, because when we talk about integrated amplifiers, we are talking about an extremely wide function spread, far more so than I think pretty much anything else in the industry at the moment.
And I'm going to throw a curveball here as well. You knew it was coming, Ed. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we're talking about integrated amplifiers. You're talking about features and sources and that kind of thing on there. We've seen a big shift also towards active speakers.
We have.
Then kind of takes the integrated amplifier out of the loop a little bit, and then you're left with the preamp source and your active speaker. So, like you say, strange times at the minute, because you have lots of options out there. So what are the benefits, Ashton, to taking the approach of the integrated amplifier over, say, a preamp and active? Or are they both really quite reasonable routes to look at?
Preamp and active speakers. Without wanting to generalize other products across the marketplace too much, where I sit here at Riga, we take a very kind of old school, almost purist approach to a lot of the products and circuits that we design. All of our amplifiers, for example, are Class AB. I have a feeling a lot of the amplifiers that you're going to find in a typical active loudspeaker are going to be Class D. So they're leaning more in towards the sort of efficiency for cost, space, heat, all these things. They're trying to optimize those to fit them into that kind of packaging. And you know, for some people, if someone's working with, say, a limited amount of space in their home, they're not looking to mix and match the traditional components in the hi-fi system. That sort of trade-off could make sense. If you're wanting to pursue, every last drop of sound quality you can get out of the system, then I think the traditional approach of an integrated amplifier, or, you know, we talk about free and power amplifiers, go even further with the separate direction. That sort of tends to lend itself more to pursuing the sound quality above all else. But even in the same form factor, if you're comparing two integrated amplifiers, those are still decisions that a manufacturer can make. Do they want to go down the esoteric route and pursue every last drop of sound quality, or do they want to go in a direction that's going to be more cost effective or space efficient or energy efficient? So, yeah, it's it's hard to generalize, but that would be my take.
And Ed, you've looked at these products. You review all of these things. I mean, I know that Ashton, obviously, what he does with Riga, they have, their ethos of how they're going to produce a product. But having a look at the wider market for those looking, and struggling with this part of their system, what's your advice in terms of looking at the different routes, whether it's preamp, power amp, whether it's preamp, active speaker, or integrated amplifier, and then choosing sources around that?
Below, I'm going to pull a number out of my arse here. Below about £4,000-£4,500, your active speaker options predominate. They are not exclusively, but they predominate to units which are sort of self-contained. The KEF, the Sonos Faber approach, where the product is also its own preamplification and, generally speaking, has streaming on board. More traditional active speakers do exist in this space, and I don't want to pretend that they don't, but they are not necessarily at the forefront of our attention, and they're not necessarily the most mainstream options going. We'll be interested to see how we get on with the PMC option that they've announced and still haven't actually sent any out yet. So we'll, it's an argument for another time. I have to admit, I do feel that Ashton's onto something. Generally speaking, these systems are, and we've discussed DSP and all sorts of things before, and I don't have a complete downer on it, but my experience with a number of these products, with the self-contained active speakers in particular, is that they are fundamentally, a number of them use a sort of, well, we'll fix it in post attitude towards their performance and iron out some of their more egregious limitations with DSP. This works reasonably well. It works increasingly well as more processing power is available to throw at the problem. It still feels, in some regards, like a less than optimal solution compared to choosing something which, broadly speaking, behaves in the space that you intend to use it. And it's not to say that you can't and also apply a degree of processing to that as well if you wished to. The other thing, of course, goes back to where do you want to be in 5 years? If you are, once again, combining amplification speakers into one constituent part, you are going to be replacing more things the next time round. You may get decent residuals for it, you may not. The more items that it's split up into, the more straightforward an upgrade is in theory going forward, if that's what you want to do. Equally, let's be honest here, a number of people, we could argue that these are the same ones, are looking to buy something and stick with it for many years to come. So the quite how many components it breaks down into is nothing like as important. But you need to be honest with yourself about whether this is an interim step or the last system you're going to buy for 10 years. And under those circumstances, the argument's a bit different. But yeah, for the most part, when we're talking about integrated amplifiers at a relatively sensible price point, its active competition is more self-contained. It is actually it's more of a competition for the integrated amplifier and a pair of speakers and the source equipment rather than just one part of that particular puzzle. There are, as I say, classic active speakers, but they're not in a majority at this price point.
Okay, I think we've covered and generalized about the subject to try and help people at this point. It would be rude not to talk about Riga because we have Ashton on the podcast. So I'm going to hand over to Ed because Ed's had his hands on these products. A lot of these products have actually won Editor's Choice Awards
Yes.
and other badges and so on. So let's deep dive a little bit into some Riga product and some of the integrated amplifiers that the company have out there and that we've looked at. So on you go, Ed. Let's find out a little bit more.
Well, I mean, obviously, my main question, and I have forewarned Ashton about this, so it's not coming in cold. Ashton has been involved in both the design of the IO, which won Product of the Year in 2020, but more recently, as I understand it, you have also overseen the work on the newest iterations of the LX and the Elicit, including for the first time in a Riga product fitting digital inputs. Now, obviously, we don't want the family silver on this one, but I mean, what w do you was this decision to fit a digital board for the first time? Is this was it motivated by actual customer feedback? Did you look at what other people are doing and think, well, that could be done for us? Or is it simply just a logical step in where the amplifiers actually were?
I think the answer to that question would depend on who hear you ask. There was a lot of discussion when it was time to refresh the LX and the illicit. It was something that, I mean, it was probably the predominant thing that came up when we started thinking about the new products. Obviously, I've come in, I'm a bit younger, I lean a bit more towards digital sources. I've ripped all my CDs onto a hard drive and put on my network and all that. Obviously, a lot of people here at Riga are very analog based. I will say I've got a vinyl collection all my own, but I'm about 50-50 analog and digital. So the idea of being able to potentially eliminate a separate component and still achieve a adequate level of performance was attractive to me. For me personally, I've got a I mean, I've got several different streamers that I hop around and use, but I've got one that's just set up for casual use. Anyone can jump onto it quite easily. I've got my TV routing all of my AV sound through as well. So my hi-fi system is used as a dedicated hi-fi system, but it's also used as a multimedia system. And so there is a level of convenience to having the digital input built into the amplifier. But we, I think very famously, don't really do a lot of things just for convenience. There has to be a valid reason for sound as well. And I think the thing that was attractive to us, it's the same logic behind why we do integrated amplifiers for most of the range, because in our estimation, the customer is better served in terms of sound for money, value for money, by trying to incorporate it all into the integrated package. It's like I said, when you split things out in separate products, you have separate power supplies, separate casework, packaging, shipping, all the overheads and things. If we had a customer that wanted to plug their TV, which most TVs now only have digital out into their Wi-Fi, they're gonna have to go buy an outboard DAC, and you can find them for fairly cost actually, but it's another cost. And if we can take that cost and roll it into the casework's already there, the power supply is already there, and we can give the customer actually a higher level of performance at the same time, because the to take the LX and illicit for an example, we lifted a lot of the circuitry in that out of the Apollo. It's a very popular CD player, very high performance. There's a for example, the line driver is an old circuit that Terry's used in various forms for a long time. It's a fully discrete circuit, and we were able to put that into the LX and illicit. It's not just an op amp, so we were able to do something a little bit special and do it cost effectively. And I think that was what made the decision in the end. It was just sort of all bonuses, not a lot of drawbacks. You pay a little bit more. If we didn't an LX Mark IV without a DAC, it would be a little bit cheaper. But the increased cost, I think, is worth it for most people.
No, there's definitely something in that. And presumably, the fact that the forthcoming Pre has the most extensive digital board yet, presumably this means that you basically won that argument.
I think there is an acknowledgement that the D to A conversion has to happen somewhere, and we still feel we can offer something compelling in that space. So I think, again, the casework, the power supply, we're off. We're still, even at that level, we're offering an improved value for money by incorporating the two things into one product without undue compromise, rather than if we had like an analog only preamplifier and then an outboard DAC. So I think the LX and illicit maybe paved the way and made us a bit more comfortable with that, because when we did the preamplifier, there wasn't as much discussion and pondering. It was just sort of, yeah, okay, let's get on with it.
And do you, I mean, this obviously, I'm not this can only ever be your snapshot, your perception of these things. But I mean, at the moment, obviously, as I say, we've got amplifiers which are entirely recognizable to if someone dropped out of a hole from the 1980s, and we've got things that are full all-in-one systems, and we've got devices like the LX and the Illicit, which sits somewhere between these two extremes. I mean, do you feel we're in a sort of transitional phase, and it's going to sort of even out into being something more sort of sophisticated than was the case historically? Or do you think that there's scope for all three of these sort of design positions to continue going forward?
I mean, to me, I think, and I hope actually, that all these different products can continue to coexist. You know, if I look at things as a customer, I'd rather have more choice than less choice. If I want to pursue, you know, kind of the last 1% of sound quality, then I'm going to be looking at, you know, separates, and I can pick and choose in each bit of the system, and try to find the highest performance option. If I want something that's very, very, very good, but I want it all in one neat package, then, as you said, there's some very high spec integrated amplifiers out there now that pack in a lot of features. So I don't think, you know, choice is ever a bad thing. I think it would be a shame if any of those choices were ever taken away. For us, as you said, we kind of sit somewhere in the middle. We have to try to straddle being accessible enough, but still being different and special enough at the same time. That's our dilemma that we're always trying to navigate.
I guess Ashton,
I'm sorry, you go for it.
Go on, Ed. No, I was just going to say, Ashton brought the choice argument in here, and I think it's an important one, because I think this is where the confusion comes, because sometimes you have too much choice in the marketplace, Ashton. So how do you get around that one, and how do you capture, for you as a business, how do you capture as many ears as possible to come and listen to your product? Because there are so many different choices now. We're talking about, like Ed said, you know, your basic 1980s, 1970s style of approach, to now where you have touch screens and, you know, streamers built in and everything else. How do you as a company approach that, whether it's the simple approach or the up-to-date smart approach?
Well, I mean, our main competitive edge to us has always been that we do offer something a little bit special with the sound quality. That's the core. I mean, look, features and different interfaces and things, at the end of the day, this is about listening to music. And I think we always try to make sure, no matter what we do, we're giving people the best experience of actually listening to the music as we can. So we're always focused on the sound quality. You know, that's why we use Class AV amps and some of the more esoteric circuits that we do. Everything else is a balancing act. Like I said, it's trying to weigh those trade-offs of convenience and features and added cost and packaging, and there's not really an easy answer. It's finding a balance, and we spend a lot of time discussing that and debating that ourselves and trying to figure out the best path to take. I will say the best thing, though, about, you know, audio, we have such a great distribution network with all the shops where customers can go in, they can get their hands on the products, they can hear the products, they can interact with the people that, you know, are able to show them all kinds of different options and solutions, and try to find what's going to fit their needs. What do they need? What do they want? What's going to make them happy? So,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some people, there are Riga dealers that have been Riga dealers for longer than I've been alive. Which generally presupposes both a degree of experience and that something is being done correctly. I suppose the last point in this, at the same time as the digital inputs have appeared, something that obviously on much wider sense than just Riga products, I now test products that have phono stages in, where it would have been wholly unlikely, to the point of impossible, that they would have had phono stages in even a decade ago. We now find ourselves in this peculiar situation where, for the most part, most people don't have a great deal of devices which produce an analog output, but vinyl sales both hardware and software against logic and reason. And I say this as someone that owns a lot of records, still defies all sort of notional fiscal gravity. Obviously, Riga has got products that have phono stages in, products that don't have phono stages in. It's obviously rather important, given the number of turntables that you make, that some products have phono stages in, but certainly at a more affordable level. Is this something where, if a manufacturer who perhaps doesn't have a huge range of turntables, which they wish to support and make a sort of core part of the offering, is this an area? I mean, I always feel that it's perhaps one where even above deciding on whether a digital board is a useful part of an amplifier, it always strikes me as something where there's a reasonable performance arguments for getting it out of an amplifier if you do want more performance. Would this, I mean, obviously you guys have done very well with integrated amplifiers that have phono stages in, but I mean, is this one area where there is an element of convenience? And if you can, would you agree that it's probably something that you would move a phono stage out if you had the sort of budget and space to do so?
Yeah, well, I mean, we do. If you look at, you know, the Athos and the Osiris, they don't have an onboard phono stage because, again, going back to the balance thing, it wouldn't be easy to integrate the appropriate level of circuitry into those kinds of products. The space, the proximity to, you know, we absolutely, you can get a higher level of performance by moving the phono stage outboard, and that's why we do. And, you know, even to talk about like the Alex and Illicit, it's a very good phono stage. It's the best phono stage we feel we can include on board, and it makes sense, but you know, you can probably improve a bit by going with an outboard one. So yeah, that's the first thing we would move outside of the integrated amplifier would be the phono stage. It's the most sensitive.
That's all.
I want to just pick up on one other point while we've got Ashton on as well. I know that you are here obviously with your Riga hat on. What's your take on HDMI eARC? We've seen it appearing everywhere now. You talked about your AV system going through your system as well, which you use for two-channel and so on. There's this huge crossover happening right now. It has been for the last few years. What's your take on it? Is it good for you guys in terms of sales? Is it getting more people involved with, you know, maybe downsizing from a 5.1 system to two channels, but still have that flexibility with HDMI eARC and so on? Where are you sitting with things? How do you see things from your viewpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody realizes that HDMI is going to be the future of the sort of AV, TV, you know, channeling sound through your system. You know, a lot of TVs and games consoles and boxes and things have started not including the SPDIF output. So things are moving in that direction. And I, you know, for us with my Riga hat on, I see HDMI the same as I see SPDIF. It's for interfacing with the more AV world. It's not, I think, going to be as high performance as USB potentially because of the clock issue. So yeah, I think we foresee in the future at some point HDMI will become for our two-channel market sort of the new SPDIF. To say nothing of obviously, you know, the surround and Atmos and all the other interesting and fascinating things HDMI is capable of. But
No, it's interesting seeing the two markets colliding as they have done over the last couple of years, and it's surprising, Ed, how many people have suddenly gone, well, hang on a minute, I don't want 5 or 7 speakers in my room. I want good quality sound, but I want everything coming through one box. It's definitely a driver at the minute.
While we discuss this, the AV industry's response to people not wanting 5 speakers in their room was to ask if they wanted 7, 9, or 10. So yeah, something had to give. I mean, obviously, yes. I mean, the thing, HDMI ARC has, there's two levels to this with ARC and eARC, isn't there? There are all sorts of bells and whistles which do not really, in any meaningful sense, apply to two-channel product. Now, there are exceptions to this. You've got companies like Macintosh who make very traditional product. You know, they've got autoformers in, for God's sake, but they also have HDMI boards which are able to, you know, take and down convert multi-channel and Atmos and other bells and whistles. But on a more basic level, if you're wanting your family to use something, something which automatically powers the amplifier up when you power the television up, is, you know, something that ensures that it actually sees use amongst other people, and it means that it doesn't alienate the household, and it means the product actually becomes more functional in terms of people's existence. Ashton is absolutely correct that in a performance sense, there's no, you know, just so we've discussed this a couple of times before, but we'll reiterate it. In terms of if your television is set to downmix 2-channel from the signals it's receiving, there is no performance advantage to HDMI over optical at all. It's just a 48 kilohertz signal from both of them. And as Ashton points out, the HDMI signal is technically unclocked as well. So the Toslink signal, in theory, could probably do better. But obviously, it requires you to select that input, make sure the amplifier's on, so on and so forth. So there's levels and arguments to ARC. But yeah, I have to say I agree with you. It's one of those things where it just makes the product just that little bit more flexible. But then nevertheless, I'm still continuously surprised by how competently and how well a number of designs seem to do without it being fitted. So I still don't think it's the killer app for users yet, but I suspect it that could change. And I suppose the thing that would really preempt that is if TV manufacturers in the pursuit of shaving another couple of cents off the bill of materials price decide to omit the optical connection, after which I guess we don't have any choice. So we'll see what happens there. But I do think there's more to give, but I do echo what Ashton said. I would like it very much if we retained at least some of the choice that we've had for the last couple of years as to what you want your system to be and where it places its emphasis. And there is still room in this for source equipment. I mean, obviously, as well as the turntables, Riga makes some source equipment. We've tested some of it. But there's a whole world of it out there. And splitting it does mean, you know, there's the potential for high performance. There's a potential for functionality, which you may not get when it's built into an amplifier. And it makes it easier to upgrade in bits in the years to come. So again, going right back to the start of this, you need to decide what functionality you want, because if you're paying for things that you aren't going to use very much, it's taking away from functionality which you do use. And that is something that bears repeating as often and as loudly as we humanly can.
Well, I mean, hopefully now we've gotten to the end of our conversation today on the subject. Hopefully people out there have new things to look at. Hopefully we've answered some of the questions. If you do have any questions, then of course you head over to avforums.com, look for this podcast in the podcast forum, ask your questions or leave your opinions on there. If you're watching on YouTube, there's the comment section below. Feel free to join the discussion down there and let us know your thoughts on this subject. Let us know what you're struggling with in terms of integrated versus pre, etc. What routes have you taken and what routes have been successful for you? And what advice would you give other people? Like I say, head over to avforums.com. There is a hi-fi section. We've got actually a new amplifier section that's been expanded out from the hi-fi systems forum. So again, another area for you to go and explore on avforums and obviously ask you questions, give us your opinions, give us any knowledge that you have in terms of how you've built your system and so on. It's always interesting to get input from like-minded people. So we'll come back to Ashton in a second. We've got to do Ed's album, vinyl, and playlist recommendations for this month. So Ed, what you've been listening to, what should people check out?
Phil, I've been listening to Noise, and it's great. Cobuzz, in their infinite wisdom, have released a 60-track, 4-hour, 47-minute playlist of Middle Eastern and North African electronic music. I'm not going to lie. I think it might count as an acquired taste, but I've been bloody loving it. Some of it's really, really bloody good. And you get some funny looks driving around with the windows down. I'm not going to lie on that, but that is by far and away my favorite. I've already converted it across to Spotify. So if people want a Spotify link, I can drop that into the comments. If you're not a Spotify subscriber, there is a piece of software called SoundEars, which will turn the link from a playlist in a streaming service you don't use into one that you do. So that's always useful. Album and vinyl is a combined effort this time. It's a band I had no inkling existed until they popped up a couple of weeks ago on New Music. They're called Kesson Coda, Kesson Coda, and they released an album called Outer State. And it's 10 tracks. It's described as jazz, but it's not really jazz. If you're in the sort of cinematic orchestra, Go-Go Penguin sort of end of jazz with more get up and go and a bit more electronics in it, it's much more like that, but it's not derivative. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It is available on vinyl too. Now, I've been a bit hesitant about recommending this because it is, when it turns up, because it's ordered, it hasn't arrived yet, it will be the first record I've knowingly bought on this recycled bio vinyl. And I've heard mixed things about recycled bio vinyl. So it could be an absolute bucket of crap. But I'm hopeful that it's not. And I'm hopeful that it will sound in some way decent. But that's my recommendation. It's been a bit of a slow phase for new music so far, this sort of last 3 months. I haven't had many things that blow me away, but I've really, really enjoyed this one. So give those a listen. And, you know, any recommendations, just let me know.
Okay. Ashton, I'm going to put you on the spot. What are you listening to at the minute? What would you recommend?
Cool. Well, I missed out on grabbing one of the surprise Jack White albums. I rode my bike all the way across London and to the Third Man record shop. So I guess I'll just have to wait with everyone else to pick that up. What have I been spinning recently? Well, we've been doing a lot of development work. So we've been using a lot of the reference discs, actually. We've got some of the Analog Productions 45s on the go at the moment. We always use the I'm terrible with names,
and I hate putting people on the spot as well, because that's the exact moment you have a brain fart, so I'm sure the name will come to you in a second. But yeah, that's what we're listening to. If you've got anything that you think we should be listening to out there as well, then drop it in the comments. Just to wrap up, we've got current competitions. Well, Ashton's still racking his brain to figure out who this group was, and we'll come back to that in a second. Right, so Ed, current competitions, what can people win?
Oh gosh, it's all the way down here. Right, you can win a single Oslo Home Cinema seat worth £1,400, courtesy of Valencia Theatre Seating. It features Italian top grain Nappa leather, a powered headrest and lumbar adjustments, hidden arm storage and LED lighting. Closing date for that is Friday the 31st of August. You can win £500 to win with MPB. MPB is the largest global platform to buy, sell and trade in used photo and video gear. I might be entering that as I need some camera stuff. You can win a pair of Focal Hadonist headphones from French brand Focal. These are worth £599, come courtesy of AV.com. I intend to be reviewing those. Still haven't turned up, but, you know, that's the story of everything at the moment. Closing date for that is the 11th of August at midnight, so you've got to be a little bit more rapid on that. And you can win a streaming system worth £2,400, which includes a Roxanne Atessa integrated streaming amplifier, a Monitor Audio Silver 100 7G bookshelf loudspeakers. Closing date for that is midnight on August the 28th, and that is a lot of system for the prize. All competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members who are over the age of 18 and residents of the UK, inclusive of the Isle of Man. Basically, it's everyone except Phil. So head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. And then there is, I mean, what do we use the word? Cornucopia, smorgasbord, absolute lunacy of disc competitions. And, you know, you name it. Think of a format. DVD, Blu-ray, 4K discs. There's competitions for our patrons. There's competitions for standard AV Forums members. There's films that you couldn't persuade me to watch if you held a gun to mine or my family's head. But there's also things there which I probably would watch, and I'd watch sober as well. So, I mean, it's a very large spread of items to enjoy there. Do you want me to push on with... I know you've got future podcasts and stuff. So, yes I've reached the end of my speaking.
You've reached the end of your bit, and hopefully Ashton is now going to tell us who they've been listening to.
I've just been scrolling back through my Discogs trying to figure out everything that I've gotten in recently. I picked up one of the Blind Melon pressings. There was a repress that they did that was supposedly from the tapes. That's been quite good. We always use the, like I said, the Analog Productions pressings. Hugh Masekela is one that we use quite often. And then, so what's the blues one? Simon can't remember either, so I don't feel so bad.
We'll get those and we'll put them in the comments section for the podcast for those of you that are really interested to hear what the guys at Riga are listening to and using in development and so on. We'll get that information. We'll shove it in the thread for you guys so you can find it. But that's it for the AV Forums Hi-Fi podcast this month. And my thanks to Ed and Ashton. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
And our next episode on the podcast will be the TV Display and Calibration Edition. That's on Monday, the 12th of August. And these podcasts are available from 7 p.m. on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. So go and subscribe to that channel if you want the podcast straight away. They're also available audio only from around about 7 p.m. on a Monday night as well. And of course, if you want to buy us a coffee, you're more than welcome to do that. If we've done enough for that, it's buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. You can also join as a patron and so on. All the information is in the description and other information below. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you again in the next one. Goodbye.